The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, a visit with Catholic writer and entertainer Ed Stuyvesant, who's been called the Robin Williams of storytelling. The author of the books Raised Catholic, Can You Tell? And Still Catholic After All These Fears, Ed has delivered a gently humorous take on Catholicism at venues secular and sacred around the world. I'll punctuate the episode with snippets from his CD, Like a Party, in which, portraying St. Francis of Assisi, he makes the case that Jesus was more partygoer than dreary moralizer. If you miss any of the episode, you can find it archived later tonight at reasonablycatholic.com. I'd like to mention that as of this airing, WESU is still a ways from its spring pledge drive goal. Have you done your part to keep the community in community radio? If so, thank you. If not, please go to WESUFM.org/pledge and give what you can. Thanks.
Hello, my name is St. Francis of Assisi. Every once in a while, God says to one of his saints, hey, why don't you go down on earth and tell the folks what the kingdom of heaven is like? And so I'm here to be frank with you about the kingdom of heaven. Basically, the kingdom of heaven is just like Studio 54, that discotheque in New York. When you die, you get at the end of a big, long line. At the front of the line, there's two guys. And Jesus Christ, he owns the place. And St. Peter, he is the bouncer. You come up one at a time, and they ask you your name. Let me give you a hint. Don't lie. You made it that far. No sense messing it up at the last minute. You tell him your name and your social security number. St. Peter types it into the video computer screen, and your whole life flashes before your eyes, as well as the eyes of all the people standing behind you. Everything you've ever done, things you've done in public, things you've done in private, times you picked your nose, everything is on there. After a while, you get a little bit embarrassed. You say to him, Jesus Christ, turn that thing off. But that's okay, because that's his name. He turns it off, and then he looks you in the eye, and he asks you the big question about your life on earth. Did you have a good time?
Welcome, Ed Stuyvesant.
Thank you. Nice to be here in Middletown, Connecticut, not far from where I used to live.
For the record, folks, we've already started off with a fib, because he's not in Middletown. I'm in Middletown. You're where?
Oh, my physical body is in Westbrook Park, Pennsylvania, 35 minutes drive from Center City, Philadelphia.
Oh, that's where your work is based.
That's where I live. But I used to live at 45 Willis Street in the south end of Hartford for 10 years altogether. I was teaching at Northwest Catholic High School in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, sure. Wow.
And then in 1975, I started working with the Plum Cake Players Children's Theater, and we would meet at Center Church there in Hartford, Connecticut, and rehearse on a Monday night and then go out and do shows throughout Connecticut in grade schools mostly. Then in 1977, I went on my own as a storyteller and a performance artist in Hartford, doing different kinds of activities for Thursday as a work of art in downtown Hartford, funded by United Technologies, as a matter of fact. We would do noontime shows on the street in Hartford, Connecticut, and that was a pretty exciting time for me.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Anything that adds life to Hartford is good in my book.
Hartford was booming at that time. The arts were getting funded by the federal government and by the Knox Foundation and by United Technologies, It was really a wonderful time.
Wow. Well, I feel we're getting a little ahead of ourselves because I need to introduce you better.
Okay.
Well, hold on a second. I also neglected to test our levels, and we are way out of sync.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry that my old engineer Burrito isn't there working with you. I worked with Burrito at WWUH-FM in Hartford, Connecticut, out of the University of Hartford for a year.
Wow. Is this gentleman Burrito a real person?
Yes, I think his name was actually Jim Fifield, but everyone knew him as Burrito.
Okay, well, yeah. We would probably go off on a terrible tangent we would never get back from if we explored that.
well, that's a whole other story. But those were salad days for me, doing a show every Monday night called the Myth America Radio Half Hour.
Yes, your friend and my teacher, mm-hmm. the gentleman who put us together, is Peter Waite, and he told me about Myth America.
Peter Waite being a brilliant comic, actor, and brilliant artist. One time, we went down to New York City and auditioned for the Compass Players Improv Theater Group.
Wow.
And I was the actor and all full of myself, and Peter was along for the ride, but he also participated in this improv stuff, and they invited Peter to be in the company, and they didn't want me because I was a terrible ensemble performer, but Peter, of course, was brilliant.
Wow. You know what? I can so totally see it. Because mm-hmm. our class is kind of a little improv group. I took mm-hmm. drawing with him. Oh, my gosh, what a wicked sense of humor.
Oh, he's great.
And such creative assignments. He brought a cooler full of fish heads on ice and stuck them. There must have been 8 of them. Stuck them on little dowels and set them up on a table that we all had our easels looking at from various angles, and we drew these fish heads.
Fish heads. That's a wonderful idea.
Anyway, we digress. Let's start with your, I want to say, secular and sacred life.
Okay.
I'm curious about your performing life. How I'm curious whether they overlap or are distinct from each other. The religious stuff, which is really, full disclosure, maybe even a little more Catholic than I am in its doctrine. Uh-huh. And it's and then there's this other area, you know, kind of popular culture, you know, venues and programs that you've appeared on that have nothing to do with religion. How do you do that?
Speaking of the secular sacred thing, I do a story called The Juggler of Notre Dame, The Jongleur de Notre Dame.
Okay.
And in that story, the juggler is juggling in the town square, and Peter Abelard and Frats of Assisi come by arguing about whether a thing can be secular and sacred at the same time. And the juggler overhears them and says, "Excuse me, sirs, I hear you're talking about this. I'm just a poor juggler, but I do have an opinion about your discussion." "Oh, well, juggler, what is your opinion?" "Well, when I juggle one ball, I think of the one God. When I juggle two, I think of how God created the world. Male and female, he created them. And when I juggle three, I think of the Holy Trinity. And when I juggle four, I think of the four gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. When I juggle five, I think of the five wise virgins who trimmed their wicks and waited for the bridegroom. When I juggle six, I think of the 6 points of the Star of David, the Seal of Solomon. When I juggle seven, I think of the 7 sacraments." Jacques was a Catholic. "When I juggle 8, I think of the 8 Beatitudes. When I juggle 9, I think of the 9 lepers that didn't come back and thank the Lord for curing them. When I juggle 10, I think of the 10 commandments. When I juggle 11, I think of the 11 apostles that stayed faithful. When I juggle 12, I think of the 12 tribes of Israel. When I juggle 13, "Can you really juggle 13, juggler?" "No, but I'm getting better every day." So there's a little spin on the question of secular.
All right, folks, Can you get the picture here? Mm-hmm. Wow. But truly, do you merge your religiosity into your secular work when you have a gig that's not at all churchy?
Yes, I do carefully.
Yeah, I would bet.
Yeah, I have a piece called The Kingdom of Heaven is Like a Party, which I do in various places. In fact, I was just in Dowagiac, Michigan for the festival, the Dogwood Arts Festival there.
Yeah.
And I did this piece, The Kingdom of Heaven is Like a Party, for a secular audience, after getting a sense that they could go along with the piece, because it's religious comedy is a tricky business.
Yeah.
The Rufus Jones, a wonderful Quaker sage, said, "Where the roots of faith are strong, the winds of laughter do no harm." And
lovely.
It worked out okay. The audience accepted it, and I always tell people when I do this piece that I'd be available outside to talk to them about anything, any if I stepped on their stigmata. And sometimes I do get the conversation going about that. In my early days, at two occasions, once when I was in Jimmy Swaggart's neighborhood, I was accused of working for the devil.
Okay. And so this is the Deep South, you mean?
Around Baton Rouge.
Okay, yeah.
This was
pretty
in
deep.
Louisiana. And that disturbed me, and I was thinking, well, if I was really working for the devil, I'd be making a lot more money. So the following week, I did a show for a cloistered Carmelite convent in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, thinking that if I really am working for the devil, the cloistered nuns will, you know, notice and throw holy water at me, whatever. But they didn't, and as it turns out, my best audience for this material is nuns. And so I'm not working for the devil.
Why do you suppose the nuns get you so well?
Because they have nothing to defend. They're not. If you have dedicated your life to being, in the old language we used to call nuns, brides of Christ.
Yes.
And that's part of the theology of sisterhood in the old days, certainly. They're not defensive. Where the roots of faith are strong, the winds of laughter do no harm, but where the roots of faith are not strong, the winds of laughter can threaten it. Nuns are not threatened by my material, and my favorite audience, in fact, is religious education conferences where there are 800 nuns who have been in the trenches and know about theology and are strong enough in their faith not to be threatened by making light of certain aspects. But evangelicals don't appreciate my material. Episcopalians love it, as it turns out, but that's another story.
No, maybe say a word or two more about that.
The part of the humor that comes in The Kingdom of Heaven is Like a Party is taking the Puritan work ethic and turning it on its head. We have an idea here in America, since the Puritan work ethic is at the basis of our religious, our capitalist, Faberian culture, we have the idea that Jesus must have been a hard worker. Mm-hmm. When, in fact, if you look at the Gospels very closely, you'll notice that Jesus was accused of being a partier, and he was. A person who associated with prostitutes and publicans and apostles and loved parties. In fact, he was compared to John the Baptist, who was a faster and not a partier.
Yes.
And people questioned Jesus because he and his apostles were so-called partiers. But here in the United States, we have a feeling that Jesus must have subscribed to the Puritan work ethic in his own day, but as a matter of fact, he did not. So I take the idea of the Puritan ethic, turn it upside down, and suggest that Jesus was the opposite of the Puritan ethic.
you're saying that, in fact, Jesus wasn't a hardworking guy. He was a relaxed party type.
Right.
And so what should we take from that as our lesson? That we should, too, be a little more relaxed in our approach to life?
Oh, are you suggesting that I have a message in my work? I would. Oh,
I'm sorry. J'accuse.
Oh, my heavens. What a horrifying thought.
Okay. Never mind.
Actually, no. The question is, you're asking a serious question, and I'm perhaps I'm treating it too lightly. In the past, two people have come up and said, you're working for the devil, but many people have come up and said, I really appreciate your ministry. And I look at people who appreciate my ministry aghast, because I don't think of myself as doing ministry.
Ah.
I actually think of this material, Kingdom of Heaven is like a party, as a kind of pre-catechesis. In other words, to break down some of the blockages that we might have about religion.
That it's not all dreary and yet thou
right.
shalt not. It's about living and enjoying life.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I think religion can be about enjoying life. Actually, if religion is not about enjoying life, it's not a complete way of doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The main thing I shoot for is laughter.
Mm.
It seems to me that the experience of people in a room laughing together is as healthy as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is anything I do which is helpful to the human person or society, is to allow laughter to occur.
Yeah.
I'm a storyteller.
Right.
Some people in my profession tell stories in order to raise the consciousness of their audience.
Okay.
Some people tell stories in order to change society.
Yes.
Some people tell stories in order to educate. I tell stories in order to give the person in the audience a break from their normal life.
Hmm.
If during that break they can come to some kind of an insight, if during that break they can achieve enlightenment or get saved, I think that's great.
Hmm.
But that is never my intention. If that's the fruit of my labor, that's wonderful. But it's not my intention.
Mm-hmm.
My intention is to give people a break and give them a chance to laugh.
It's great.
Yeah, so that's what I think I do.
This is a visit with Ed Stuyvesant, a former religion teacher who holds a master's degree in theology from Notre Dame University and who's putting his expertise to use as a comic entertainer. In between segments, I'm playing excerpts from Ed's CD, Like a Party. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith on WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters and hoping you'll contribute to the station's spring pledge drive by going to WESUFM.org/pledge. Any amount with a 5 in it and a shout-out to Reasonably Catholic on the form will nicely mark the program's 5th year on the air. Thanks.
Jesus Christ himself did not subscribe to the Puritan work ethic in his own day. As a matter of fact, if you look at the Gospels, you'll notice something very interesting about Jesus Christ and hard work. He was accused of it twice. He denied it both times. What did he do? Party, 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 party. He partied with the Pharisees, he partied with the publicans, he partied with the prostitutes, partied with the apostles. Night before he died, what did he do? Some people call it the Last Supper. I like to call it the next or the last party.
You mentioned a bit ago that you particularly appreciate religious educators, and mm-hmm. I read that you were one.
I was indeed.
And I love the anecdote that kind of turned your head, where the kids weren't paying attention,
yeah, right.
Summer vacation was on the horizon, and you were frustrated, and you said, "Do you think I'm here because I like to hear myself talk?" And they nodded.
They did.
And that's what made you think, maybe there's another career for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. Teaching religion at Northwest Catholic High School there in West Hartford was really wonderful for me, and it was in the classroom in Bible class that I learned the power of storytelling and how storytelling can allow education to take place.
The part of the story that I just can't figure out is how these kids could not have helped being just completely captivated by their religion teacher.
Oh, they were in October.
then the bloom was off the rose by May.
Oh, by May. Yeah, and there's other things, you know, the prom and... Although they don't call it the prom, do they? They call it prom.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That's weird.
That's weird.
But
anyway.
Prom has more of a focus than Mr. Stuyvesant's antics and attempt to educate them, although it really was a wonderful experience at Northwest Catholic High School. And if there are any grandchildren of Northwest graduates, please tell your grandparents I said hello.
That's so nice. Okay. Besides being a storyteller in performance mode, live and in person, various places, you are also the author of a couple of books.
Yes.
Raised Catholic, Can You Tell? Is one.
Raised Catholic, Can You Tell? Yes.
And the other is Still Catholic After All These Fears.
Yes. After All These Fears.
Maybe you can synopsize them for us.
Oh, well, let me sing you the theme song of Raised Catholic, Can You Tell?
Sure.
And it goes something like this. Well, I was raised Catholic. Can you tell I was raised Roman Catholic? I obey real well. I was raised Catholic. Can you tell I'm on my way to Catholic heaven because I've been through Catholic school. The Mercies taught me how to read, the Augustinians how to write. The Jesuits showed me how to think, the CSC showed me the light. I went to Holy Cross Grade School, Monsignor Bonner High School, St. Joe's College, and Notre Dame. And I know it isn't whether you win or lose, it's how you pray the game, because I was raised Catholic. Can you tell I got the Catholic look? I genuflect real well, I was raised Catholic. And can you tell I'm on my way to Catholic heaven, because I've been through Catholic a school. Anyway, the book Raised Catholic, Can You Tell? Begins with the first day of school at Holy Cross School here in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, and it ends with the goodnight kiss after the junior prom on April 16th, 1963, just as Vatican II was heating up over there in Rome, and the bishops were planning to take away the religion that I had been raised in for most of my life.
Is that how you really see it?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
You loved pre-Vatican II Catholicism better than the current state of things.
I was raised in pre-Vatican II Catholicism, and sometimes I think that my Catholicism was crystallized in 1955 when I was confirmed. And after that, there was no reason to modernize, at least in my imagination.
Okay.
Yes.
And so This is interesting. What is it that you miss the most about pre-Vatican II Catholicism and like the Latin Mass? Oh, say it again.
Silence. In the old Tridentine Mass, what we call now the Tridentine Mass, which we'd never called then because it was just the Mass.
Yes.
In the old Mass, the priest had his back to us, did most of his prayers to himself in Latin, and gave us a chance to be alone with God. Then, in 1963, the bishop said, well, why don't we have the priest turn around, face the congregation, change it to allow it to be changed to English, and then get the people in the congregation to participate at a higher level, which meant that we didn't have a chance to be alone with God.
At least not during Mass.
Right. How ironic. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I miss the silence of the old style.
What else?
Liturgy.
There were a lot of changes.
Yeah, a lot of changes. In fact, I have a song. Would you like to hear my song?
Oh, my gosh. You have to ask?
Yeah. And this is about rosary. Do you remember the rosary? Do you know what that is?
I do.
Yeah, good. Anyway, let's see if I can sing this song. If you can imagine a young lady an older woman sitting in church after Mass, saying her rosary, and here is, we'll see how far I get.
Okay.
Rosary's not a sound as they slip through, bony fingers surrounding, beads well worn by the years. The young curate comes up the aisle and grabs for the beads as the folk choir begins to tune, 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 tune. Rosary, this is the curate. Rosaries are a thing of the past, dear. What you want to do now, dear, is relate to the folks around you. So open up and give us a hug. Now the new church has begun. Once upon a time, the church was time for contemplation. Mass in Latin, the priest dressed in satin, and quiet contemplation, etc., etc., etc. Gorish banners galore. Now that, anyway, that's my tune that I wrote for a religious conference years ago.
Fantastic.
So I miss the old church.
Yeah. So you suffer when you go to church. I know you do attend Mass regularly, right?
I'm used to it. I didn't stomp out.
Okay.
I go to daily Mass and I go to the daily rosary group. In fact, an hour ago I was saying the rosary with the rosary group. So we didn't put down our rosaries. We kept the things from the old days, some of us, and still say the rosary. In fact, I had a great moment just a week ago going out to Notre Dame, where I took a master's in theology, and visiting the campus and going to the grotto and saying a rosary there at the grotto and lighting a candle. So some of us Catholics still, you know, maintain a mindset of those old days.
Yeah.
And even though we do practice the modernized Mass, and don't eschew it for something else, there is a warm place in my heart for the old days.
Yeah.
It's nice to be in a church, a big tent, you know, that church.
Right, there
and
you go.
We can practice the way we wish to practice.
Maybe the church should rebrand the rosary as a meditation practice.
Okay.
You know, and then it'll get a little more traction with the young ones.
I see. Sort of yoga.
Kind of,
Catholic
right?
Yoga,
Catholic, the there you go.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I'm just saying.
Hmm. Yeah. The nice thing about the rosary is that you don't need you don't need a church to do it. You don't need priests to do it. You can do it on your own, or you can do it with a group of other people. And it, ultimately, it is a meditation device, you know, for some of us, that we can, that you might even say the Hail Mary becomes a kind of mantra that allows one to center Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I think you've got a good idea there.
This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from WESU 88.1 FM Middletown and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters.
Like what you hear on WESU 88.1 FM? Consider making a donation. WESU is an independent, non-commercial station that relies on the generosity of listeners like you. You can donate online at WESUFM.org or by mailing a check to our Broad Street address, which you can find on our website. Thank you again to our listeners for keeping us alive and thriving on the airwaves since 1939. We appreciate your support.
And so the boy grew up in wisdom and age, and he loved to go to parties. Every party he went to, he was the hit of that party. One time he said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life of the party."
So the latest work that's out there now is The Kingdom of Heaven is Like a Party, correct?
Yes, audio tape of the performance I did of The Kingdom of Heaven is Like a Party at the National Storytelling Festival last year in Jonesboro, Tennessee.
It is a hoot. You are St. Francis of Assisi, mm-hmm. and you're leading us through various aspects of the Bible.
Yes.
And it's, I had to say, I listened to it in the car, I almost drove into a ditch.
Laughing. Oh, no, we don't want that to happen.
What can you say about it for people who may wonder? How did it go over, first of all, at the National Storytelling?
Oh, the National, it was wonderful. The audience at the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, is probably the sweetest storytelling audience in the world.
Aww.
The people who come to it know what storytelling is, and you don't have to explain it. And this festival has been going on since 1973.
Wow. Is it huge?
It's huge, yes. Maybe 10,000 people come down.
Wow.
It's a wonderful festival. First Friday weekend in October in Jonesboro, Tennessee, near the Tri-Cities Airport in northeast Tennessee. 3 days from 9 o'clock or so on Friday morning till 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Until midnight each of the weekend nights, maybe 14 storytellers and a great audience. And if you come down, please join us at the steps of the courthouse for a street performance of storytelling there on Saturday afternoon in Jonesboro, Tennessee. But please come down to Jonesboro, Tennessee. It's really a wonderful festival.
It's great.
There are other festivals. There's a Connecticut Storytelling Festival.
Do you take part in that?
I have taken part in that one, and if any of your listeners are on the committee, I'm available next year.
You have to be invited.
Yes.
But I think you should, I mean, you're a shoo-in, right? You've been called the Robin Williams of storytelling. That's
Well, thank you very much.
Well,
I have. And because of my improvisational skill of making mistakes and then making up for it.
I love that. So when I go to your website, edstivender.com, I see that you are described as a Shakespearean actor, banjo player, theologian, mummer, and raconteur.
Oh, boy.
That's a lot of talent, man.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I have enjoyed doing Shakespeare in college. In fact, we just had our 50th reunion this past weekend, and I got a chance to go into the Blewett Theater, where I christened the Blewett Theater as the Fool in King Lear. And
this is St. Joseph's in Philadelphia?
St. Joseph's University now, with college then, St. Joseph's in Philadelphia, which was a great experience, working for Dr. Ollie, doing Shakespeare and other things.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And you've pursued your acting life alongside your theological explorations, I'm imagining. And you find they kind of inform each other?
I think you're right, yeah. I think they do inform each other. And Yes, I guess you're right. They do.
It sounds like a pretty cool way to live.
I'm very lucky. I've been very lucky. I've been to New Zealand doing storytelling, and Graz, Austria, and Ireland, both Ireland.
Wow. And they know from storytelling, man, in Ireland.
They do know from storytelling, yes.
And you were a hit.
I was a hit in the South.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So Northern Ireland, the Protestants, they don't get you.
No. It's not a question of Protestants. I think it's a question of reservedness.
Oh.
Yeah. I think the Ulster people are more reserved.
Okay.
So I may have been a hit, but they didn't let me know.
They don't heckle you.
Pardon?
They don't heckle.
They don't heckle, no.
Okay.
No. So, no, they don't heckle. But they might be more reserved than the other people. But yeah. Delightful. There's a wonderful place in Ireland called the Ulster American Folk Park.
Okay.
Near Omagh, which it has, on one side, it's what Ireland was like in the 19th century, and then you get on a steerage class of a boat, and then you get off the boat, and you're in America, like Pennsylvania. It's a very sweet thing.
Hmm.
My family is, my mother's side is from Northern Ireland, and we're more reserved than other people might be.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole other topic of conversation.
Oh, we could go on for days.
Yes, that's right.
And thinking about your Shakespearean experience,
mm-hmm.
I and of Ireland, kind of weirdly, I just went to a performance of Long Day's Journey Into Night.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where?
A real picker-upper.
Where? Yeah. I was going to say why. But
right.
Where?
Well, kind of, this was the appeal of it. It was staged in the actual family home of the O'Neills in New London.
Never.
In the parlor.
No.
It was creepy.
Oh, man.
With the mother moving around upstairs.
Oh,
and
no.
Yeah, it was wild. But anyway, there's an exchange between the character who's supposed to be Eugene O'Neill himself and
his
dad, who objects to O'Neill's choice of reading material and is always trying to promote Shakespeare instead. And at one point, one of the sons, it might not have been the Edmund, it might have been Jamie, said, "Oh, yeah, and you think Shakespeare was Catholic, too."
Uh-huh.
And the father says, yes, he was. And, and in fact, kind of recently, I saw something in the news about proof that, yes, Shakespeare was Catholic. Do you come down on that side of things?
Oh, Shakespeare was surely Catholic. Absolutely. But he had to
but
be...
But stop calling him Shirley.
Shirley, I'm sorry. Shakespeare
sorry.
Was surely,
yeah.
surely Catholic. But he was an underground Catholic, like some of us are still today,
so
who
true.
Had his own faith that didn't come out because it was against the law to be Catholic during Shakespeare's day.
Right.
Yeah. And in fact, if I may brag about my city,
please.
In 1730, Philadelphia was the only city in the whole British Empire in which a Roman Catholic Mass could be said without threat of execution.
Whoa!
1730, William Penn opened it up a little bit, and so it was possible to say Mass, for a Catholic priest to say Mass in 1730 without being arrested.
Oh,
so
my gosh,
during
wait.
During Shakespeare's time, arrest of Catholics was a common thing.
In the 1500s. Yeah, I get that. But in the 1700s?
1730.
Wait, 1730. Didn't the Puritans come here for religious freedom? Help me out.
Yes. Puritans went to Massachusetts for religious freedom of Puritans. But Catholics would be persecuted. But in Pennsylvania, William Penn was a Quaker. And so it was a pretty open situation. Anyone who believed in one God could practice in Pennsylvania. And so in Philadelphia, it was illegal to say Mass throughout the British Empire, but it was not illegal to say it in Philadelphia. So I'm bragging about Philadelphia, cradle of liberty, and so forth. And so it was a delight to watch the head of the Church of England witness her grandson's marriage yesterday on television.
Mm. Go on.
No, that's all I got to say about that. That's all I got to say about that, except for how interesting was the bishop's gear, color-wise.
Oh.
The bishop that married the Duke and Duchess of Sussex.
Remind me. I don't remember this.
Well, go on the web.
No, tell us. Tell us. What color was it?
Pardon?
You say it was a color?
It was colorful.
Colorful.
It was the most colorful chasuble or cope or whatever it was that I've ever seen. It was quite amazing.
In a good way? No.
No, in an amazing way.
Okay.
In an Anglican way.
Well, look. Gosh, you keep feeding me the straight lines.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sure you're aware, and it's kind of a little bee in my bonnet, that right now at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, there's an exhibit, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Heavenly Bodies, The Catholic Imagination and Fashion.
Yeah.
And I'm working at trying to get my brain around why this is good publicity for Catholics. It's like crowns and stoles.
Yeah,
and help me out. I mean, do you agree with me that maybe this isn't the best kind of publicity?
Oh, no. No such thing as bad publicity, as you know.
Okay.
The idea, the phrase Catholic imagination is brilliant. And I'm very proud of the Met for using that phrase.
Well, they borrowed it from Andrew Greeley.
Oh, really?
He's the sociologist priest, now dead, God rest his soul, who had a book called The Catholic Imagination.
Oh.
So don't give them too much credit at the Met.
Ha, how about that? Wasn't David Tracy?
Tracy did write an essay about Michelangelo, right?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, anyway, we digress. What do you think of the exhibit?
But on the back, may I just mention Father Greeley, God bless his soul. On the back of my CD, it says, Andrew Greeley calls Ed Stuyvesant one of America's great storytellers. So thank you very much.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, I guess. Yes, and Andrew Greeley was a wonderful author and made Catholicism hip in ways that it had never been hip before his writing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Catholic imagination. I was very happy to see the Met use the phrase Catholic imagination in their thing. And I didn't understand it because the Met Gala ball had this Catholic theme. And I didn't get this, but I did watch some of it and looked at the photographs. And was duly horrified by the spins that various socialites and actresses and famous people did on the Catholic imagination. And it looked pretty demonic, some of it, to me. But that's a whole nother...
But it was utterly blessed by Archbishop Dolan himself, you know. He gave his imprimatur to the whole thing. And,
how about that?
Yeah, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I love the idea. And certainly having an exhibit of all that Catholic art. Of course, the word art meant Catholic until about, you know, well, certainly 1600, Martin Luther. Happy anniversary, by the way, all of our Protestant brothers and sisters.
Yes.
500 years of Reformation.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting. Ending in the Bishop's Chasuble yesterday in Windsor.
Right.
So anyway, Catholic imagination. It was very nice that the Met would do that. And it was very horrifying that the Hollywood made it a little creepy.
Kind of. Thank you. I thought it was me.
No, it's not you. It's us.
If you are just joining us, this is a chat with Catholic entertainer Ed Stuyvesant, who's made it his vocation to give you some laughs. The audio punctuating the segments is from Ed's CD, Like a Party. You can learn more about Ed at his website, edstuyvesant.com, and by going to wesufm.org/pledge, you can support this station, which brings you the kind of programming you really can't find anywhere else. Thanks for giving what you can as we try to bring our spring pledge drive to a successful conclusion.
Well, as a matter of fact, I do have a more modern way to tell the story, and that is, if you give me a snap, I'll give you a rap. I call it my Christmas wrapping. I said, oh, once upon a time, a long time ago, there was a baby born in Bethlehem. He was born in a stable on the donkey's dinner table, and the magic men came to visit him. They brought him gold and frankincense and myrrh and said the boy was gonna be a king. Marriage.
How do you keep your creativity alive?
Audiences. Yeah. It's the challenge of an audience and the idea of entertaining audiences is part of is the most exciting aspect of the thing, and playing with an audience. I look at storytelling as a kind of dance between the audience and each person in the audience, which, by the way, is an audient. Do you know this word?
No. Audience,
singular for audience.
Wow.
Audience member. I may have made up that word, but I use it in my workshop. That dance is a wonderful, challenging dance that it is part of the creativity.
So
the
you
other thing
can,
is,
yeah.
Pardon, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go.
No, go ahead. You go.
Well, just you can sense from the audience what their proclivities are, you know?
Yes.
I mean, at the outset, you said you can tell when an audience is going to be amenable to the religious stuff.
That's right.
And it's just is it a skill you've developed to be that attuned to, or is it just obvious?
It's obvious to people whose skill has been developed.
I get it, yeah.
I think there is a development that does happen, but certainly, every performer knows when they're bombing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you know when you're bombing.
But then, let's say you're in the middle of your shtick, as you call it, and you sense you're bombing. Can you do a U-turn? Can you recover?
There's a good question. Sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't.
Mm.
The most horrifying bombing moment in my career was, it happened in 2002 at Jonesboro, Tennessee. 2002, we were on the way to war in the Middle East, and every time you turn on the TV, you saw, you know, you heard the drums and the thing marching toward war. Everyone wanted a war in Iraq, and I didn't want a war in Iraq, and so I was going down to Jonesboro, Tennessee, and thinking, you know, what's something clever I could do? And so I decided to run for president. And I decided that I was going to have one plank in my platform. And that plank was going to be, war is inevitable.
Oh.
A word that I thought I had made up.
Oh.
Turns out I didn't really make it up.
Really?
So I thought, oh, this will be very clever. I'll say this and the audience will get a big kick out of it. And then that'll be an introduction to my parody of the Secretary of State and all of the people in Washington talking about how easy the war in Iraq was going to be. And I had a song called Golly Gee Willikers, Let's Go to War, and trying to do a send-up of the war fury that was happening in our culture at that time.
Yeah.
2002. Went down to Jonesboro, Tennessee, gave the line, war is inevitable, and did not get a laugh. it was a pretty rough moment
for me. Wow.
And I didn't get a chance to sing my war, let's go, gee golly, gee willikers, let's go to war. And that was a bombing moment.
Well, what did you do?
I think I changed the subject and tried to entertain the audience for the rest of the time.
I mean, really, what else could you do?
But it was a rough moment.
Well, we shouldn't end on that note because that's so sad.
Pardon?
We shouldn't end on that note because that's so sad. So let me ask you one final question,
if you
don't mind. What do you think of the Pope?
I think this Pope is wonderful. I think he's wonderful not for the reason everybody else in the world thinks he's wonderful. I think he's wonderful because he hasn't changed one iota of doctrine. At the same time as giving Catholicism a very high profile of inclusivity and wonderfulness.
Wow.
Without changing one iota of doctrine.
So interesting.
There are people in my culture, and in fact in my rosary group, who do not appreciate this Pope because of what it looks like he's doing to doctrine, but in fact he has not done anything to doctrine. And I think this Pope has a wonderful attitude towards the poor and the downtrodden and ecology without changing one iota of doctrine.
You will love this new documentary that's out about him.
Is it good?
Oh, well, for people who like him, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a love letter.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad. He is. But whether I like him or not, he's the Pope. And against the Pope, there is no argument. That's in canon law. Now, I love the last two popes because they were theologians.
Yeah.
And I like this Pope, even though some people don't like him because they're afraid of him. I think he's a great man. Plus, he's a Jesuit, and the Jesuits taught me how to think.
Hmm. Well, on that note, I think we have to call it a day. I'm so sorry.
No.
The time just zoomed by.
Yeah, it did. This has been a delight for me. Thank
really
you very
fun.
Much.
I'm grateful to Peter for putting me on to you, and I wish I had more listeners.
Oh, no. It's okay. As a matter of fact, my dad said, Eddie, if there's only one person in the audience, you do it for them. And I said, hey, Dad, what if there's nobody there? He said, ask for a mirror.
Well, you come by your humor naturally, it sounds like.
I guess.
You're a delight. This was really fun. I'm glad we don't have time to get into why I object to Pope Francis.
You object to Pope Francis?
I feel there are certain changes that are required for the good of all that are not forthcoming. So I have a problem for the reason that you love him.
Oh, isn't that great? America.
Let a thousand flowers bloom.
Okay, I agree. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much for this time.
Anytime. Next time you have something to talk about, you know, a book, a DVD, a CD, you make sure you let me know.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck in your work.
Yep, you too.
God bless.
Bye-bye. That was an interview with Ed Stuyvesant, a Catholic performer who's been compared to Robin Williams, George Carlin, and, in a good way, Garrison Keillor. Thanks for joining us. I'll post the audio, plus photos and other bells and whistles later tonight at ReasonablyCatholic.com. Finally, one last pitch for our spring pledge drive, which is several thousand dollars away from its goal as the end of the fiscal year approaches. Please go to WESUFM.org/pledge and show your support for independent, freeform community radio and this kind of programming. Where else can you find it? Case in point, next week's interview is with a pair of artists who are atheists and who have produced gorgeous work for one Connecticut parish. I'm Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening. Now stay tuned for Wonderland with DJ Cheshire Cat.